old and young friends. Okay, so I will talk about some work that I've been doing for some time with a collaboration with my students Ben Krippendorf and Matt Dolan and Anshuman Maharana, but also with some work with Cliff Borges here and Michele Ciccoli. So let me start with the issue about the string phenomenology. The idea is to look for models which or things that can be extracted from string theory that can be realistic in the sense that it can describe particle physics. And we always face the issue, most people concentrate on this problem, that there are too many string models. And there are, we know over the years, since 1985, starting from the heterotic, type 2A, type 2B, and type 1, and then the landscape, many, many string models that are close to the standard model. But the other question that I'm worried also here is that the other way around, is that there are too few models. In particular, there's, at the moment, I could say there are zero models which are, we can be claimed to be realistic, because the constraints, experimental constraints that we have are very strong, and with the model, any model that people have built fail in one way or the other. So this, this is the challenge that I think I will be concentrating today. So one motivation, of course, is that the LHC is running. And the LHC is one of the justifications that people expect to get something from LHC is that the hierarchy problem, and there have been several approaches to the hierarchy problem. Probably the most popular is having supersymmetry at the TEV scale, broken at the TEV scale, but there are other approaches like having warp extra dimensions and large extra dimensions and so on. And of course, from the string theory perspective, any of these approaches at the end have to be faced with to be an ultraviolet complete theory, so they have to be coming up from a theory such as string theory, so that motivates the approach of doing string phenomenology. And then there are issues of how to fix the size of the extra dimensions, so you get unification, the flavor issues, proton stability, and so on. So I will start with the local string models. And the idea of local string models is to have the extra dimensions to be a Calabi-Yau or something like that, and then we will be living in one D-brain, say a D3 brain or a D7 brain wrapped on a 4-cycle or so. And then so we have to concentrate only, for many of the questions, we concentrate on the local issues, just on the brain itself, rather than the complications of the corresponding Calabi-Yau. And so in that sense, the standard model is localized, and that's what something we call the bottom-up approach, that we just concentrate on what you get from the deep brains and then build up from that. And over the years, people have come out with different proposals of this bottom-up. The original ones that have D3s or D7 brains at singularities, then magnetize D7 brains, wrapping on the smallest 4 cycles, and more recently, this local theory models that have been popular in the last couple of years. So I will concentrate on the brains at singularities part, and that has many issues that make them interesting by themselves, phenomenologically, and also very restrictive. So the simplest cases are when you have, orbifolds or so, but in particular the concrete cases are when you have del peso surfaces which are collapsing 4 cycles, and which in this case del peso n goes from 0 to 8, and where you, the thing is that then you start with P2 and blow up P2 at n arbitrary points, blow up at P1, and then n is restricted to go from 0 to 8. The best of 0, the simplest one, corresponds to a Z3 orbital, but then there are up to 8, and they are the simplest cycles that you can just contract to one single modulus to a point, but they're not the most general. Of course, there are other more general singularities like so toric singularities in general and so on. And So to go to something realistic, let me just start with the simplest case. This is the peso zero. And then you have, is determined by, well, the information on the spectrum is given by the quiver diagram. So you concentrate on these three blobs, where you have N1, N2, N3. And the gauge groups will be UN1 cross UN2 cross UN3. And these arrows will be by fundamentals of the corresponding groups. And the fact that there are three, that means that you have three families on each direction. So the simplest case is already very interesting because you can see that the three families appear in the natural way. And if N1, N2, and N3 are equal, then you have a conformal model, and then the model is consistent by itself. You know, it's, the anomalies cancel and so on. But if the N's are different, then you have to add say extra state like these seven brains, N1, N2, and N3, that I'm pointing there here. And then you have to have D3, D7 states, which are these arrows. And then that probably gets complicated. And on top of that, you may have D7, D7 states that will be non-localized. Okay, so these simple models, you can just compute the spectrum right away. It's three families of all these bar fundamentals. And the number of D7 that you have to add, they are restricted by tadpole and anomaly cancellations, which are particularly given by this expression. One of them is an anomaly-free U1, and it's usually identified with hyperchairs when you have the standard model. So just with that, you can start playing. And for instance, you can have the standard model gauge group by just using here 1, 2, and 3. So you have U1 cross U2 cross U3 plus the rest. And then you have to see how the standard model spectrum fits into this. So here you have the left-handed quarks will be the triplets on the SU3 and doublets on the SU2. Or you have the right-handed up quarks, which are triplets on the SU3, but singles on the SU2, of course, so charged under the U1. But then the D quarks will be D3, D7 states in this case, that you cannot fit all of them into the trees. And so then you have three Higgses and so on. So you can go to a little bit more interesting model, which is the left-right symmetric model. 3, 2, 2, U3 equals U2 equals U2. Here you have the right-handed and the left-handed parts coming into D3s, still three Higgs, and the left-handed then are the 3D7s. This is probably more interesting, the Patti Salam. Because Patti Salam, you have U4 cross U2 cross U2. So the bifundamentals here would be four on the SU4 and two on the this left-handed SU2. And this one is four and two on the right-handed SU2. So this makes eight states, plus this eight states is 16. So you have the 16 states of the standard model, including the right-handed neutrinos. And on top of that, you have the Higgses, the three Higgses. So this is the first case, where the simplest case, where you can have the whole standard model living on D3 brains, and then the rest are just extra, the three D7 states.
Yes.
Right. And how do the Higgses emerge? I mean, are they an additional ingredient you have to put in, or
to break the symmetry?
So in the standard model, you have three generations, and you have to put the Higgs in kind of in addition, and also in the MSSM.
Yes.
So how does it come here?
Here you have the three generations. You have the Higgses already.
Yep.
And then so they have it all. Then they have to have another sector where to break the symmetry.
Okay.
And so this is localized. You have the standard model in a say the D3 break, so you can break supersymmetry in another cycle or that. Or that I will raise this point at the end. Yeah. So that's good to ask the question. So you separate the questions from the thing that you can approach locally, and locally you can approach things like the spectrum, gauge unification, flavor issues. They are all local things, but at some point you have to address the whole global thing, and that will include model stabilization, supersymmetry breaking, cosmological constant, and cosmology, and so on. So but the good thing about this bottom-up approach is that you separate the two questions. And that's an advantage over, say, the old-fashioned heterotic models, because in the heterotic, you have you have to ask the question in the whole model. If something doesn't work, you have to throw away the model and start again. Whereas here, you can just build up the good properties locally, and once you have something local, just stick it into a global picture that you have fixed somehow in some other way, so at the end you put the two things together. So it's, in that sense, it's much more modular. So you can just concentrate on some questions and address those questions in one case. Once you solve those questions, you address it in the global way, and then they put them together. So that's the picture here. So supersymmetry breaking is the, one of the global questions.
So as you go towards the UB, is one must probably go through this duality chain of deeply engaged groups and other representations and so on.
Yes.
Is there anything special about, or anything different about the four models? One of them goes, hits a wall in the
cascade, so not that I see. Yes, I just concentrate on the weak weak coupling part. And
was nice because I don't know,
that's
in a wall, the duality cascade.
Right. Yes. Yes. It would be nice.
Are you going to be able to construct something really in weak coupling? I, my impression was most of these things you had to have a V-string fairly close. Two or half or something.
Then you have to start, sorry?
My understanding was in a lot of these things, you really had to have U-string not that far away from one. Are you going to be able to do much better?
U-string not that far away from one?
Yeah.
Not really. No, you can
have okay, you can do much better.
Yes, there's no problem. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that is at the end how you fix the dilaton, and the dilaton can be fixed for large numbers, the process and so on. And then the important thing here is not necessarily, well, in this case, the G-string is essentially the gauge coupling, but in other cases, it's the gauge coupling is just the size of the corresponding cycle. Mm-hmm. And so that can be also fixed large enough to have a coupling. Okay, very good. So I was talking, well, this is a Patterson-Lan version, as I told you, nice. So you can have the whole standard model in the T3 brains. Then the trinification model with SU3 cos U3, you also have the whole standard model on the D3 brains. This is like a small version of SO10. You have the whole spectrum here is like a 16 of SO10 in terms of the composite to the Patterson-Lan group. And this is like a 27 of E6, the composite to U3 cos U3. So in that sense, even though you don't get GOT models here, you get the physics because essentially you have the same spectrum, and being the fact that all of them are in the same D3 brains, then you get gauge coupling unification. So you don't have to have a simple gauge group to get unification. Okay. So that was DP0, which is interesting. And on top of that, people being one of these examples of Torrey singularities, DP0. You can compute the superpotential exactly, so at least the D3 brain part has been very much explored. And from that, you can immediately extract phenomenological implications. In particular, you get the Yukawa matrix for that will give you the mass matrix. It becomes like this once you identify the Higgses. And from that, you can find that for the quarks, you have two degenerate eigenvalues, m and 0. And that is very bad because then you have two generations of the same mass and one generation with zero mass. So that's not what we observe in nature. So that's bad for this del peso zero. But if you go to del peso one, remember we can go all the way to 8 and actually all the way to 3 if they're toric. After 3 they're not toric and we don't understand them that well. So we still have some room to play, DP0, DP1, up to DP3. And DP1, essentially what you add is, you have an extra vertex in this in the picture, so you have a square. And so now you have a product of four gauge groups. And if you, this extra field, phi, you give it a VF, essentially these 2 points coalesce to one single point, and it gives you back del peso zero. But in general, you can consider the whole picture like this, like the DP1. And then you have, again, the superpotential, and the mass matrix that you find is now capital M, little m, and zero. So that means that now you can get a hierarchy, which is what we wanted. So you have a heavy generation, a lighter one, and an even lighter one. So, and that depends on the ratio of the depth of this field with respect, say, to the string scale. So that will give you the hierarchy. And then you can do the same game now for DP1, so that you can start the standard model of the left-right symmetric and so on. I have to say that the left-right symmetric on DP0 was interesting in particular because you will get gauge coupling unification, even without asking for it. You get gauge coupling unification, but at 10 to the 12 GeV with a similar precision of the MSSM. So in this case, now this model shares the same good properties without the bad property about the hierarchy of the masses. So you have a much more interesting model. Okay. I won't go into details, but something just to give you the information. We went to more general toric singularities last year, and we found something like a bound on the number of families. The number of families essentially bounded by 3, which is not bad. And this hierarchy that I told you for this del peso 1 actually appears in all the toric cases, not only the DP1. And in particular, this 0 eigenvalue is always present. So it's something that is very, very, very generic. So the case of DP0, where these two quantities were the same, was just the generic case. The other cases are, you have the hierarchy, and you have always the 0 eigenvalue. That's an interesting thing, because you have hierarchy. At some point, I will raise the issue how to lift the 0. That in principle, you will say, oh, it's easy to lift, because by loop correction or something, the 0 masses, like this generation, can be generated by loops. But it's not that easy, so I will go back into this. Yes, depending on which group you have. This is particular for quarks. So you have just the standard model. This will be only for quarks. But you have the particle land, for instance. Leptons and quarks come together, so this will be for both. But because then the leptons are more model dependent. They can be D3, D7 states and so on. So only when they are inside a bigger group so that you can just say the same for leptons and quarks. Then you can go a step further. Once you have the right hierarchy, you can start asking questions about, you can get the CKM metrics. And that depends, again, on depths of fields. So you can, this is the up quark part, this is the d quark one, and then you can get a CKM, which is just a parameterized in terms of parameter epsilon. So we can determine this parameter epsilon in some ratios of depths. And the nice thing is that at least you get the diagonal to be essentially 1 is very generic, and the question is how to adjust depths so to get the something small. And that can be done in some cases and cannot be done in other ones. So in DP1, it works if the spectrum is D3, D7, but not for D3, D3, for instance. For that, you have to go to DP2 or DP3. Then to guess, once you have the CKA metrics, you can go for phases and look for CP evaluation parameterized by the Jarskog invariant. You can just compute in terms of this quantity epsilon, and for us, this Jarskog invariant essentially gives us epsilon to the 6th standard sine of delta, where delta, this is determined in terms of ratios of depths. So again, to get to epsilon to the 6.5 is relatively easy by playing with values of delta. So in that sense, this can be achieved. Okay, so this is more or less trying to be as general as possible, but the question is, can you go to closer and closer to something more realistic for particular models? So as I told you, DP0 has problems, and DP1 solves some of the problems, but not all of them. DP2 solves another of the problems, and so on. And then, we went to see how much restrictions we can start adding to make a model more realistic. So one of the general things that we have is that in these models you cannot have a simple gut group. SU5, SO10, you don't get them into this. You always have products of groups, and also you don't get, if you have SO10 or something, you don't get the proper representations. And essentially, you get something with SU5, you don't get the right Dukawas. That was people motivated the last couple of years to study FQD models. So in that sense, you cannot go to the SU5 and so on, so you have to there's a bound, there's a limit, so you can get up to, say, the particle lambdas or the trinification model, as I was telling you. So you have to get all the physics from that. So that's good of Barnier's. It's good in the sense that the room to play is small, so you can just concentrate on models which are, say, Lebesgue symmetric or particle lambda, and that's it. There are usually many U1s because the gauge groups are UNs for each vertex. But Of course, many of them are anomalous, so they get massive. So there are three classes of U1s. Anomalous, they get mass of the string scale. Non-anomalous, usually get mass of the Kaluza-Klein scale. And the ones that U1s that are inside a non-abelian engaged group, and they remain light. And usually the hypercharge, you have to keep it, you have to see, identify one as hypercharged and keep it light was one problem. The other problem is that if it is a combination of the U1s that you have there, usually you have to normalize it, and it usually doesn't come with the standard normalization for the NSSM, which is this famous 5/3. So that's an issue, and so that means that to if you want this right normalization, not necessarily, but if you want to take seriously the fact that the gauge couplings unify in the NSSM, and you want to have the 5/3 normalization, so then you have to have the U1 inside a non-abelian group, like a DSU4 of Patti-Salam and so on. And of course, you want all the standard models particles inside D3 brains. Then for that, you need the Patti-Salam or SU3Q. So in that sense, that is very, that starts limiting the kind of groups you can have. On the other hand, you start with El Peso, you know that there are up to 8, and I told you up to 3 is toric. So, and we know that DP0 doesn't work because of the hierarchy. DP1 and DP2, you get a CKN matrix, but you don't have control on the kinetic terms. So when you talk about realistic couplings or framework change in neutral currents and so on, people have been addressing this only looking at the superpotential, but not about the carrier potential, but not about the kinetic terms. And that is something that nobody has been able to address in the string models, because we don't control the kinetic terms. The carrier potential is the thing that we understand the least. And so it's hard to say something concrete about CKM and so on if you don't have control on the kinetic piece. You have to go to the canonical normalized fields. And for that, DP3 is special. To DP3, you get all the connected terms are flavored diagonal, and then you will get a realistic CKM and the PMNS matrices for the leptons and the neutrinos. And so in that sense, that singles out DP3. It's the maximum one that you can get all these good properties, and the minimum one that can be toric. So in that sense, and before I told you that the biggest group we can have was essentially the Patti-Salam. So it makes sense to look for Patti-Salam in the peso 3. So that's the way of putting the constraints and singling out. So this is what we have done. And so we start with this is the DP3. Remember, we start with DP0 was a triangle. You have the DP1 as a square. At the end, DP3 is a hexagon. So you have a hexagon. At the end, you have 6 gauge groups. And to have Patti-Salam is U4 cross U2 cross U2. So you have to have 3 extra gauge groups. So the simplest is have 2 copies of Patti-Salam. So this is Patti-Salam square. And then these arrows, I said, when I give a VEF to this field, this SU4 gets broken to diagonal SU4. The same thing for this one. You get diagonal SU2 right and diagonal SU2 left, essentially. So that's a nice way to get the Patti-Salam from the peso 3. And all the particles are, or the standard model are inside here. Contrary to the triangular case that I was telling you with 3 arrows, where you have the multiplicity of families, here every family is different. So for instance, one family will be this arrow of the quark doublets. One quark doublet will be this one, but the other quark doublet will be this one, and the other quark doublet will be this one. So since they are coming from different arrows, they are charged on the different U1s. The U1s belonging to this U4 and U2. So that means that you cannot have couplings mixing the 2 generations because it will not be gauge invariant. It's only diagonal couplings you can have. So in that sense, this flavor issue about the kinetic terms, even if you don't understand the whole structure of the kinetic terms, you know there has to be gauge invariant, and gauge invariance in this case say that you cannot have, it has to be diagonal in the family space. So this is a property that as far as I see it, this is the first time that people get it, especially in string theory, a model where you control the kinetic terms. And then you can talk about then flavor issues with the physical couplings and not just with the superpotential. So And of course, since all the standard model particles are inside, are in the D3 brain, the gauge coupling is just a dilaton, and then you have gauge unification. Very good. Yeah, so you can see the protons are stable, because you, well, you can see all the potential proton varying number and lepton number violating operators are not there. You get the hierarchies, as I told you, like in DP1, you have the quark and lepton mass hierarchies. The, you have a seesaw mechanism for the neutrino masses. The neutrino masses get get the mass in terms of a seesaw mechanism. You get the right-handed neutrino masses get heavy, and there are two ways that they can get heavy. One is by you know, the standard neutrino mass term will be forbidden by gauge symmetries. So you have to generate it either non-perturbatively, so you have an exponential non-perturbative factor there, or it so happens that at the end, the gauge group, when you do all the breaking, the gauge group is not just the standard model, but the standard model times a U1 or just the left-right symmetric model. Then you have to end up, you have to break this extra group at low energies. And the way to break it, because given the spectrum that you have, the only thing you have in hand to break that group is to give, sorry, I miss an S here. Okay. So it is the right-handed S neutrino that gets a VEF, and then that breaks the extra symmetry to the standard model. So if the right-handed S neutrino gets a VEF, that means that you're breaking also R parity. So this, all this, this model, at some point, you will have the NSSM, but with R parity violating operators. So that's a signature beyond the standard NSSM models. And on the other hand, this R parity violating operator doesn't generate proton decay violating operators. So in that sense, it is a very well defined realistic scenario. Yeah?
Tingzing that you're talking about, like to get down to Patti Salam and then to get from Patti Salam to standard model E plus U1, and then that's at some very high energy scale.
There are two. I'll tell you about this when I talk about unification. Because all this depends on vector fields. Depending on the vector high, close to the spin scale or not. So then you have two scenarios, essentially, intermediate scale or dot scale. Except for when you break, for instance, this U1. So then you have to give a mass, you have to give a to the right-handed S neutrino. And the question is how is it that you can get a mass to this field? So then you have to play, the proper way to do it is to take, you know, the way you do it in the MSSM, one of the beauties about the MSSM is that you don't put by hand the Higgs potential. It's just generated by the normalization group running, you get to the negative mass squares. So you have to do the same thing now, not only for the Higgs, but for the S neutrino. And then see how either you get to a negative mass square for both. And then what is the VEF of that they are going to generate? So in this sense, we want to get the seesaw to work. The best thing to get is that this RG flow will give you to, it will induce a VEF for the neutrino hierarchically larger than the VEF of the Higgs. So then the right-handed neutrinos get heavier. But I mean, so the right-handed neutrinos can be, say, intermediate scale or so.
Direction I was going. I'll delay the question to later. But I was wondering about gauge unification. That you seem to be doing all this extra stuff, but you get unification is just for free or something. You
know? Okay. Well.
Why don't you just?
I continue because I will address your questions. Yes. This is just to show you that the model is not as simple as I told you. So the simple part was this thing, the D3 part, but on top of that you have to have D7 issues, D7s, so the D7s complement that. So you have to, at the end of the day, you have to consider the whole D7, D3, D7 states, how the D3, D7 gets a mass and so on. But at the end, at low energy, the D3, D7 disappear from the spectrum, but this is just to be honest. Okay, and this is, we label the fields in these different names, so that will give that will tell you which VEFs, which guys gets a VEF, and that's, I think that is your question. But again, what is the value of these VEFs, the value of those VEFs, and the value of those VEFs? That would address which different scales you have. and this is the spectrum at low energy. Is the case that I have this extra U1. This is the U1 charge. This is essentially, it's a B minus L. It's a combination of B minus L and hypercharge, essentially. That's why it's at low energies. But you, yeah.
The moment.
Yeah, but I mean, it's flat directions in the sense that there are F flat or D flat with non-abelian D flatness. Then you have to have the U1s. So you want to get, you have a Fajelio plus term and so on, then generate a potential. And then you have to, an open question is, because many of the things depend on the ratio of these VEFs, is to have a whole potential for them. But there are, at the end, is I think it's like the order of 12 fields. So you have to have a potential with 12 fields, and that we haven't done. Okay, so this is a super potential, or this, these are the standard images, same couplings for the leptons, the quarks, the Ys and the Xs. It says Y, X, and Z are different quarks. And so on. So you have the standard say, terms for that give mass to all the standard model particles. You have a term that gives mass to the right-handed neutrinos, and a term that gives the new term, so the Higgs with the new term. So usually the new term is always an issue about in the MSSM. Here, gauge symmetries forbid a new term, an H-H coupling, so it is generated only by non-perturbative effects, so that explains why it's small. But the same issue applies to the right-handed neutrinos. And the right-handed neutrinos is forbidden by gauge symmetries. They only appear by non-perturbative effects. And they are also suppressed. The question is how much suppressed they can be, because the right-handed neutrinos are supposed to be heavy. And so fortunately, we have this other mechanism to generate masses to the right-handed neutrino, which is giving a VEF to the neutrino. That's the way of breaking the symmetry. So in that sense, this may not be the dominant source of right-handed neutrino matter. And we things can work. Well, so then to get the CKA matrix to work, we have to adjust some of the VEFs. They have to take this value. Epsilon is not that small, so in that sense, these are not strong fine-tunings, but they have, at least you can get the structure of the CKA matrix as it is standard parameterized. The question is if at the end of the day, when you minimize, you can actually get those values. The same thing for the PMNS matrix. That is much less restricted, but you have to have, for instance, a strong coupling between first and second generation, and that is essentially achieved when you have these VEFs for the same epsilon squared. As I told you, we have 14 parameters. Mostly are VEFs of fields, or these parameters in the exponential of the non-perturbative effects. But we have 21 observables in terms of masses and couplings. So in that sense, there are some constraints. It's not just, we can say predictions of 7 objects, because you have 14 VEFs and 21 observables. This is probably addressing Rob's question. So we have the two pictures. One is everything that is heavy, is really heavy, on the string scale. So this is the simplest case. And then this is the standard Patti-Salam unification with the standard 5-first normalization of hypercharge. The running gives you the MSSM running. So essentially, this is telling you that the string scale is 10 to the 16, and you have the standard unification. This is not unified here, because we are splitting the 5-first part and making a difference. So the if we would have drawn this with the standard way that people draw it in the normalization, this would have been already here on unification. So what I'm saying is that this means unification. Okay. Don't get confused that this is not unification. Okay. The same thing here. Just because that's for controlling the running, we prefer to plot it in this way. And here is this other cases that depending on who gets. So we went through the whole RG flows of the couplings, of the gauge couplings, and see if there will be some thresholds for which you can get unification. And so as I told you, this is the standard. This is the standard MSSM that you get it. But this is not the only solution. There are other solutions where you can play with one of the scales to be smaller. On the other hand, you cannot play freely up to 10 to the 14. Below that, you cannot get unification at all. So essentially, you can only play between 10 to the 14 and 10 to the 16. And that's a bound. But I think, I don't know if that addresses your question, Rob, because the different scales come from different scales of the bits. Okay, so emphasizing, unification is always there because the gauge coupling in the web of the dilaton is only one gauge coupling. So the question is, if after running, you get to the low energy values of the cost coupling that we know now. So usually this is phrased in the other way. You just fix the value now and then extrapolate and see if you get the unification. So So in that sense, we have several solutions. The standard one, which is not easy to get, but now we are getting it. But there are other solutions in terms of intermediate scale for unification. And how to determine the scales? You need modular stabilization. So let me just remind you some things about modular stabilization. This is all the thing that we did with the large volume scenario. So you have the Calabi-Yau, we have the three cycles, the four cycles, and using the GKP, and you can fix all the three cycles, and then using a variation of KKLT, you fix the other cycles. I won't go into details, because I think I may not have that much time. But this is an old story. It's a work we did more than 5 years ago. This is a real, this is a concrete example of Calabi-Yau 11169. And this is the real picture of that Calabi-Yau, made by Robert Perret. So this has this property of that is that it has two Keller moduli called tau S and tau B. This is big and small. And this is the volume. This combination is the volume. And this is the alpha prime corrections. So the superpotential, this is the standard case in the KKLT scenario. You have superpotential is a combination of fluxes plus non-perturbative. And they just tune the fluxes so that these terms compete to get a minimum. What we found in the large volume is that actually you don't have to tune the fluxes, which are usually determined by integers, so it has to be a relatively large number, or at least of order 1, not 10 to the minus 11 or 14. But to fix the moduli, you compete this non-perturbative term with an alpha prime correction that comes from this. That is, when you expand, it goes like 1 over the volume. So at the end, you compare this with 1 over the volume, and that will give you an exponentially large volume. But volume will be determined mostly by the tau big. So this tells you that tau big is exponentially tau small. And that's a nice way of getting hierarchies in string theory, because dynamically you stabilize the moduli and in a hierarchical way that the volume is exponentially large. So you can get as easy any scale that you want for the string scale. Because you know that tau s has to be large. So e to the tau s is exponentially large. So that is good, and there are several examples. We call them the Swiss cheese example cases, because that the expression for the volume, remember, is the difference of these two things. So the larger this model is, the smaller the volume. So this is the picture of the Swiss cheese, and there are many models that satisfy this constraint. Essentially, it's close to half of the Calabi-Yaus. You can have this because it depends essentially on the sign of the Hodge number. If the Hodge number is negative, you get large volume. If it is positive, you don't get it. Yes.
Just the Gaussian nature, more is it just you're arguing it's supersymmetric, therefore you have some argument that you have all of them under control, or what's the...
Very good. Yes, you have to have the alpha prime corrections. Yeah? So then what we are taking is the leading order alpha prime. Mm-hmm. And so you have to see if all the other terms, because this comes from the R to the 4 coupling. So you have to, we went through all the terms which are the same order, say R to the 4, how will they generate something at lower edges? And they all come with higher powers of inverse volume. So they are hierarchically suppressed. And then for that, there was a recent, there have been two things that actually could have killed this setup. One is that there are string loops. And the leading string loop correction naively would have been stronger than the leading alpha prime correction. However, when you do it, and people have done a very hard kind of company, the leading order 10 doesn't give you contribution to the scalar potential. It's on the next order, and the next order is smaller than the alpha prime. So that's the first one. Then the second one is that this is, when you do this analysis, it is n equals to 2 kind of complexification. So people say, what about n equals to 1? People forget about that you have a real folding, it will give you some contributions which are dominant over the R to the 4. And there was a paper from Angelova and Seti and so on. Seti is involved. And so it was good. This has been pending for years. People always ask us the same question. And so they did a calculation. And again, they get suppressed. So it's suppressed compared to one of the volumes. So you can see version 1 and version 2 of that paper, they changed the conclusions, because they thought at the beginning that it was being dominant, and then version 2, we convinced them that it was subdominant. So essentially, so this is the leading order of conclusion. Okay, so and then you have the large volume. What does that have to do with the previous story that I was telling you? Is that since the volume is very large, then so that means that you have a cycle which is very, very, very large and dominant on the size of the other cycles. And the standard model cannot be a D7 brain wrap in that cycle because the gauge coupling is proportional. So G squared is 1 over the volume of that cycle. So the standard model cannot be wrapped in that cycle because that cycle is exponentially large. So the standard model, you have weak coupling, but not exponentially weak coupling. So that means that the standard model has to be wrapped in one of the small cycles. And then eventually those sub-cycles are the ones that can collapse to zero. The large cycle cannot collapse to zero. So so that implies precisely that you have to have this local model is an outcome of this. So you have large volume, then you have to have local models. So the standard model has to be wrapping a small cycle, and then you have a bigger cycle there. So that's one implication. The second implication is that they may be D7s wrapping this big cycle, but then that means that these D7s imply that there will be gauge couplings, which will be exponentially small. So it will be a natural prediction. There will be an extra gauge couplings, extra gauge symmetries, which are exponentially small, so they're hyperweak new interactions. So that could be an interesting, because it's very generic from here. The question is if they have any signature or any implications, we don't know exactly. They may or may not. Yeah. That's the issue that we don't know. And it's a prediction, but we don't know if it is. Okay, so yes, but just to say that yes, that it's interesting because you know that there is a kind of theorem said that in string theory you cannot have exact global symmetries. So that's essentially a theorem, and in this case they will look like almost exact global symmetry, but the gauge coupling is so weak that it's a very much approximated global symmetry, so it can be used in that regard, which is interesting. Yes. I say that because that's the paper I have with the chair of the session and Cliff as well. Anyway, very good. So then you have the volume very large. The string scale all the scales can be parametrized in terms of the volume. The string is volume to the 1/2, the Kaluza-Klein volume to the 2/3, the gravitational mass, because I didn't tell you about all this minima, a large volume breaks supersymmetry. That answers the question raised previously about supersymmetry breaking. So, and the gravitational mass goes one over the volume. But then the mass of the volume modulus is lighter than the gravitational mass. And there may be other cases which I didn't talk to here, like when you have K3 vibrations. You can have modula which are even lighter than the modulus itself. So they have a hierarchy of masses in the moduli, and they can give to interesting or complicated physics. And then you can have general scenarios. One is that the string scale can be the God scale, as I've been mentioning before. And in that sense, the model I had with the gauge unification at the 10 to the 16 GeV fits very well into this. For that, I have to remind you that the volume has to be at least 10 to the 5, as I said, it has to be close to 10 to the 7, actually. So you still need an exponentially large volume to get the God scale. So that's something non-trivial. However, to get, you have a volume this size, you want to get the gravitational mass. The gravitational mass is very large. And so then you don't solve the hierarchy problem in that regard. To solve the hierarchy problem, you need a volume much larger, in string scale to be intermediate, and then the gravitational mass to be for 1 TeV. So that's the naive thing. Either you have unification to work or the hierarchy problem to be addressed. And the extreme case is when you have the volume say 10 to the 30, and then the string scale is 1 TeV. And so that would be the exciting for the LEC. And of course, you have to readdress the models that I presented before because they are
not thought in this way, but there are models that you can build which are non-supersymmetric, and for that, this scale is okay. And I have to emphasize that getting volume 10 to the 30 is as easy as getting model 10 to the 5. So there is no, if someone tells you that the natural scale for a string theory is the God scale, it's wrong. So because this is as easy to get as that one. So when you say that the natural scale is this one, it is because you have some kind of things, some prejudices towards a God scale, but this scale is as good as the God scale, I would say. And, sorry?
That's in the last line. So this most exciting case,
you
ruled out.
Yes, very good. No, there are
the two balls cancel each other. Yes. So naively, you will say, "Oh, this one TeV, but then the mass, the gravitational mass. The string scale is goes like 1/(1/2). So the volume 10^30 gives you that. But then, as I told you, the volume modulus, this guy, the mass goes like 1/(1/3). So it's extremely light. So 10^30 is the volume, so this is extremely light. So you will say, oh, this is the mass of this side. So it will be against all field force experiments and so on. However, that was assuming that you have, that was the source of supersymmetry breaking, was the teaching of the volume. If you have the standard model, if you have a scenario of one TeV, the standard model doesn't have to be, it cannot be in a supersymmetric brain. It has to be in a non-supersymmetric brain, so it's an anti-D3 brain. So if it is in an anti-D3 brain, then the main source of supersymmetry breaking is the brain itself. So then the scale of supersymmetry breaking is the string scale. And then that raises the size of the mass of this volume modulus, precisely at the 10^-3 electron volts. And then we are in the safe region. So that's why the two bots heal each other.
The rest of the analysis?
Yeah, we have to revise the model building that I did before, yes, because the model building I did before was supersymmetric. So now we have to consider the standard model on a non-supersymmetric frame. So it has to be.
Like the powers of volumes and the masses aren't changing, except for this paper one, more or less.
Yeah, oh, yes. Yes, thank you.
And what about the light fiber? That also seems.
Yes, but you don't have to have, because they have to be K3 vibrations. It's a particular case of Tarabia, so you don't have to have a K3 vibration. But yes. I think that
I'm not sure we analyze that case if that is also it can be lifted to this. Or everybody will be lifted to 1/(1/2 volume. I'm not sure we did that, but so anyway, so this is a possibility, and so you show some interest. Let me just give you an aside that I can mention because of this. The TV scale has been more people have been talking about that since this ADD papers, and the most interesting case was the six-dimensional case, where in six dimensions you have the string case. And so the question is, we can get exponentially large volumes, but usually it's the whole six-dimensional exponentially large. So we were not getting, say, micro size of volumes, but we can get in 10^-12 or so centimeters. Can we get this picture, which is two very large dimensions and the other one not that large? That's something we achieved recently, and that's one of the reasons we are here to finish the paper quickly, is with precisely with these K3 vibrations. If the Calabi-Yau is a K3 vibration, the structure of the volume has a special expression, and for that you can separate two dimensions from four. For instance, you can have here, if it is linear, in one of the T's are the size of two cycles, and the tau's are the size of four cycles. So if it is linear in one of the T's, the T can be very large, but the corresponding tau, which is, since it is the derivative of the volume with respect to that T, will not depend on T, on this T1. So T1 can be very large, but the corresponding tau1 is not that large. So you have the two dimensions very large, and the other one is not that large. And that can be done, there's a paper of Blumenhagen et al., where you can have something called poly-instantons. And the constraints from the sine code that they have to satisfy are these ones. And that's precisely the H10 is 0 for K3, and H20 is 1, and precisely the K3 satisfies that. So the K3 vibration give you this constraint, and for that, then you can have polyinstantons for which, at the end, the shape of the superpotential is an exponential of one of the T's, but on the other T is an exponential of an exponential. So when you do that, you get precisely the scale, and this is more or less the picture This is the two large extra dimensions. This is so this is the K3 part, K2, and this is the extra cycle, which will be one of the blow up modes that we have. And so they are hierarchically small compared to the large extra dimensions, and so we can get models which we have the TV scale, and the size of the extra dimensions is the micron size. So in that sense, this is the first realization of this kind of large extra dimensions and six dimensions. So which is coming from the string theory, I think, is interesting.
It's supersymmetric vector size. Yes, it is supersymmetric vector size. That's it. Very good. And that means that the supersymmetry still is in the bulk. Supersymmetry is broken.
In the bulk, is you have an extremely low energy supersymmetry because the splitting of the multiples in the bulk will be given by the 1 over the volume, and the volume is extremely really large. So, but since we live in the brain and we have broken supersymmetry directly in the brain, so we see the we don't see supersymmetry at all. And supersymmetry, on the other hand, on the bulk, is almost exact because it's the splitting is very, very small. So it's a very interesting kind of scenario.
That when you say that you're getting ADD from string theory, what all the experimentalists will think is, oh, so we're thinking of the bounds that we would calculate from ADD, but because that was motivated as a replacement for supersymmetry, they're always thinking about graviton production, and this is different phenomenology.
Actually, it's completely different phenomenology, but you have a whole supersymmetry feature.
Yeah.
And for that, you have to follow Cleve's papers. Right. So, okay, so I'll finish soon. In general, the picture, we would like to have
a single picture but as you can see, there are many scenarios depending on the volume. You can have the COT scale, the intermediate scale, the TV scale, and even if you have the supersymmetry, if going back to the TV scale, but to either of the other two, there are two ways to break supersymmetry. You break supersymmetry by fixing the moduli, so your vacuum is non-supersymmetric. But the source of supersymmetry breaking, the leading source of supersymmetry breaking, is the F term of the modulus of the volume field. But that case, that volume behaves in a way that there is of the no scale type in the standard supergravity. And it is well known that the soft breaking terms of the no scale is zero. So even though this is the main source of supersymmetry breaking, the soft terms are not dominated by this field. So you have to look for the F terms of the other moduli, of the small moduli in the picture. So the small moduli can be the modulus where the standard model lives, or can be a farther away modulus. Depending on the case, we have a different way of getting subterms, and in the one case we get the 10 to the 12 GeV, and the other case we get the 10 to the 15 GeV. So this fits with the standard GOT unification, and this is with the intermediate scale. I have to say that this is the extremes case, and it is, you need to have the whole. This scenario to be realized, you need to have in the standard model only on D3 brains, not D7. So this scenario with a GOT scale that will relax the issue about the tension between getting the hierarchy problem and unification. But then you have to address several issues. Some of them are good and some of them are not that good, because then the uplifting to the sitter can be an important contribution to soft terms. So that's something that prevents us to have a complete control of soft terms. The gravitational mass can be very large, and that's good because of the cosmological problems. In particular, the cosmological model problem can be addressed in this approach by having the volume modulus not great, heavier than the soft terms. And that is one of the most generic property of string models with low energy supersymmetry, is that they all have to address these cosmological model problems. And in this case, in principle, it can be addressed. And the minimal volume is 10 to the 6 to 7, so that gives you the GOT scale more or less in good shape. So anyway, so the implications, you have then the several scenarios, one is the intermediate scale, the GOT scale, and the TEV scale, each one with different kind of phenomenological properties. And for the TEV scale, we have to worry about potential destabilization of the large volume is something we are thinking of. So it's not completely clear. To finish, there was an issue I mentioned at some point that we had the hierarchy of masses in the model we had. They were capital M, little m, and zero. So the zero itself can be lifted by perturbative corrections. You can, but on the hand, there was a paper by Ibanez in 1982 where he estimated how much lifting will be induced on the masses of the quarks by supersymmetry breaking. I had the wave of the Higgs, the F term, divided by the corresponding ultraviolet scale square. And when you plug the numbers, you get 10 to the minus 30 MW. So that means that even though we were looking for a small number, which would be the masses of the lightest generation, this is too light in the standard supergravity scenario. Now we reanalyze that in the two scenarios we have for supersymmetry breaking. And other, the things change from the original scenario of Ibanez, that the M Planck is changed by N string, or the F term will give you, well, the, or the gravitational mass is heavy in the second scenario we have. And in both cases, then we get the splitting of the multiples, the mass of the corresponding lightest generation to be of 0.1 MeV, which is on the right ballpark. So in that sense, these two scenarios are, go beyond the standard supergravity scenario and give you some good values for the masses of the fields. And here, well, we have explicit diagrams that achieve that. I won't go into detail, so let me just conclude. So this continuous progress in the local model building and the and model stabilization in terms of large volume, which is good. So issues about the CKA metrics and so on were not addressed over this 25 years or so of stream phenomenology. This is only starting to be addressed because people didn't have a good enough models to do it and not control. So now that's a sign of progress. There are several scenarios. So there's rich phenomenology, of course. But of course, there's no one single scenario that we said this is the way to go, and this is the kind of prediction that we can say model independent, so that we have to live with. And we, as I told you, this Del Bezzo 3 model has satisfied all the requirements for being realistic in a very interesting manner. So it's and it was the minimum in one direction and the maximum in another direction. So it's an interesting model to study. But there are many open questions. The details about SUSY breaking that I told you are not well under control. The flat directions that people ask also between F and D terms, the D term part is complicated because you have to minimize potential for many fields. And of course, at the end of the day, you have to put the two pictures together, which is having the right model of model stabilization with the right set. Look for a Calabi-Yau with a DP3. A cycle that you can, where you can put this, the realistic model, and then put the two things together, everything together in a compact model. That has to be done because it requires a much more work. Anyway, okay, thank you.
What can you say
about
the chronological constant problem in this context?
The chronological constant problem. The other thing is the landscape. The landscape is you have many vacua and yes, and but I think it's something that's it's not bad in the sense that without that, at least for the concrete models of subsurface breaking or so, we couldn't even say anything about what it is. So at least there's a way to approach it, whether constant, either we like it or not. And whoever has some criticism to this has to come up with a computable approach that nobody has. So in that sense, behind the story that the landscape is playing the role. I have to say I don't like that as a solution, but it allows us to do to work in a consistent way that can there are many vacua and then this freedom to play with, and it would be nice to have like a selection of what the vacuum is and get to the small value and so on. Having the no-scale structure here in principle, so the no-scale value is a nice potential, the flat building order, so that it is corrected by this alpha prime correction, so that even though the naive expectation would be that the potential would be like 1 over volume squared, by these calculations, it's like 1 over volume cube. So, and you just say you have 10 to the 30, the volume 10 to the 30 is then the value of the refractory is 1 over 10 to the 90, so 10 to the minus 90, which is not that bad, but it's not quite 10 to the minus 120.
That would be something to speculate about. But on top of all this is the landscape. We cannot just deny it. It's there, and that have all these different.
I'm not following the logic around the landscape, because on the one side you prefer to pick certain models.
Oh no, very good. Right. But the genesis is in different directions. Okay? Mm-hmm. The genesis of the landscape is on the model stabilization, on the how you fix, for instance, the compass structure model. And they are fixed by fluxes, and you can fix the fluxes, and they like, give you different size of the throws and different ways to tune the cosmological constant. And since there are so many of the solutions, 10 to the hundreds or so you can be as fine as possible. That is completely orthogonal mm-hmm. to the local thing that I was doing about the model. That would make this local model building interesting, because that would be a way to address the cosmological constant, or if there is another way, you still, this local part still is there, but it's independent. So it's what is the degeneracy? Some of us like to call that the flavor of degeneracy. The degeneracy in the standard model part compared to the flux degeneracy, which is for each of those fluxes, and so you can stick to your standard model. So when people say you're looking for the standard model in 10 to the 500, that means that they don't understand the picture. Because there are 10 to the 500 pictures of the standard model. So that's not where you are looking at the standard model. You are looking at the standard model in the determinacy of realistic models for each of these 10 to the 500 flux factor. So it's an orthogonal kind of degeneracy. And so in that sense, you can deal with both. And, sorry.
Well, in the same direction though, is it? I mean, the local model has some model IQ that needs to be fixed, or some complex structure model IQ locally. But is it clear that they won't be affected by, there could be a coupling of these model IQs and the other ones?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, one of the nice properties of this, the PESO up to 3, is that there are no complex structure model IQ for them. And so the sort of potential is just your fix. When you go
right, you're thinking, yes, so it's open, it's a D7, I guess.
Exactly, right. So in that sense, that's one of the reasons to stop there, because after the DP4, then you have them. And that's interesting for several reasons. One is, for instance, the issue about, one of the criticisms, this is gravity negation, supersymmetry. So you come to this part of the Atlantic, that's bad words. You say, well, gravity negation is bad because there's a problem with flavor. And you go to Europe, people don't care about that. And then the reason is that, of course, generic gravity condensation has problems with flavor. But that doesn't mean that, you don't have to always look for a generic. A generic potential is not flat, but that doesn't mean you don't have to look for inflation. So in that sense, in this case, you get a flavor diagonal because SUSY is broken by the Keter modeling, whereas the model that fits the feel the flavor at the compass structure model. And so in that sense, the supersymmetry breaking terms are blind to flavor in that sense, because in the superpotential you don't have the Keter model appearing. So as long as the compass structure and the Keter model are separated, then you have something which is flavor diagonal. The question is, how much do you preserve that separation? Then there will be further this higher order effects, so that may be something. Then you can see how much this universality of copies is preserved. So, but in that rough first order, you can see that there is no issue with flavor. And then you have to worry about the flavor issues coming from the kinetic curves. And in this case, the DP3 model addresses, this is the first time I can see it being addressed, because then the DP3, it is, whatever the scalar potential is, at least to the order is as long as the symmetries are correct, this structure of the Keter potential is diagonal also. So
the same thing is, if you have a model which you can show you have no flavor problem from gravity mitigation, is somewhat saying the same statement as saying that it's very localized and it's insensitive to change of fluxes, say, far away from it. And so that it won't be sensitive if I change the cosmological constant.
Yes, but in principle you have to see at some point you have to put in the whole picture together. You have to see how the complex structure and the Keter complex structure model are mixed, and that's something you can control. And just to finish something I addressed at the beginning, that for hierarchy problems, people have coming with a lower energy supersymmetry, warping, and large extra dimensions. And the three have somehow realized here in kind of in a string way. So it kind of, that's interesting for richness, but of course it's not a constraint, but it's an interesting picture. So at least if they don't see low energy supersymmetry, we don't panic.
Any other questions? Oh. If not, let's thank Fernando again.
Okay.